Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Scrambling for safety. Masses of Texans ran from the hurricane as Rita swirled toward the coast. This storm proved less destructive than Hurricane Katrina. Plenty of flooding, fallen trees, and massive disruption, but less ultimate death and destruction. The evacuation for Rita left thousands trapped on clogged highways, yet somehow they got out and now wait to return. Many experts say this may now be our fate. An era of more super storms, a natural hurricane cycle that could be pumped up by global warming. If it is, imagine what's ahead. Mapping and remapping evacuation plans, fortifying the energy infrastructure, grappling with mind-numbing deficits and disaster-driven economic strategies, populations and industries whipsawed by weather. This hour on Point, imagining a generation or more of giant storms. You can join the conversation. What if? Can the region, the country, keep this up? Can we handle it economically, psychologically? Have Katrina and Rita changed your vision of the future? Or do you smell storm hysteria? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin this hour on the Gulf Coast. Chris Axtman is Southwest Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor and joins us from Houston. Chris, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Schlefstein is environmental writer for the Times-Picayune of New Orleans. He joins us from Baton Rouge. Mark, good to have you back.
Thank you.
Chris, first to you in Houston. So everybody left, or an awful lot of the population there. How much is back? How much is expected back when?
Well, we had probably 2.5 million people leave the Galveston-Houston area, and that was in just a matter of 2 days, and that's where the significant traffic problems happened. Now they're coming back in stages, and the local officials down here have asked them to come back to their particular cities or regions in stages, and it looks to be that is what they're doing.
And
so the traffic coming back is much less problematic.
This is stages by neighborhood, by part of the city or cities?
Parts of the region, actually. For instance, northwest Houston and Harris County came back yesterday. Today, the southeast portion is coming back. Galveston County has still not been decided when they're going to be allowed to come back. So it's sort of a day-by-day question.
And Mark Schlefstein, in Baton Rouge, looking down toward that southwest Louisiana coast and New Orleans again, how do you assess the impact on that region from Rita?
Well, we've had some additional damage, as you may know. We had some more flooding going on in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
We had a small community south of the city called Lafitte that was flooded. There's been, when you get into the western part of the state and the Lake Charles and Abbeville and areas like that, major significant flooding that unfortunately caught people unawares, not in terms of it coming ashore as the storm came ashore, but rather the storm came and went, and then they went back to their homes and got caught when the storm surge came in. They've been picking people off of rooftops for the last couple of days.
I want to get a sense from each of you of how residents in that area are processing this. And Chris, first to you, if I may. An enormous effort that went into evacuation. It turns out it perhaps wasn't necessary, but you never know until afterward. How are people taking this on board? Around the rest of the country, I hear people looking down and saying, my gosh, if this is the future, how do we keep this up? Do you hear that in Texas?
Well, I can tell you, for this particular storm, Katrina was so close, and Houston was so intimately involved in the evacuation process of Katrina that people were so concerned and hyped up about it, that the reason why there was such a traffic jam getting out is because even though they weren't under mandatory evacuations, they left anyway because their nerves were already on edge. So people are frustrated, as you can imagine, and worried about if another storm is to hit, how they're going to deal with it both physically and emotionally.
And economically, no doubt. The Texas coast has a lot of experience. We've all heard the story of Galveston at this point. There is this talk in the scientific community, the meteorological community, of us being in the midst of a new natural cycle, maybe turbocharged by global warming, not sure, that could bring more of this onshore in the years ahead. Mark Schlefstein, given what we've seen in New Orleans and Louisiana, what's your sense of how that population is dealing with it? Is it just we've been here before, or is there a new kind of fear?
No, it's much more problematical in New Orleans because, for one thing, a lot of the protection that we had from the coastal wetlands surrounding us is largely gone through coastal erosion over the last 50 to 60 years. And you also have to remember that the reason that this is so intense right now is because of the huge increase in population that we've had all along our coastline. Ironically, that's not necessarily as true in New Orleans, which has had basically a stable population. To be honest with you, the thing that people in New Orleans want to do right now is get back into the city. It's been 3.5 weeks, and see what has happened to their homes. I went in yesterday and found that as bad as I thought it was actually worse. And I know a lot of people are going to be looking at that, and they want to know how you know, what the rules are going to be for them to rebuild.
Worse in what dimensions, Mark?
Well, the dimensions for me were up. I had 1.5 feet of water on my second floor that I didn't think I had.
The second floor? Wow.
On the second floor. So that's like, I don't know, maybe 11.5 feet of water.
And you're not talking about just any home. You're talking about your own. What about you personally, Mark? We understand that urge to get back home, to clean things up. When you step back and look at the next 10, 15 years, do you scratch your head and say, is this going to work?
Well, you know, the risk was there before. It's the same risk. It hasn't changed a bit. So for me, we're going to have to discuss it, my wife and I. And I haven't seen my wife since the storm. She's elsewhere.
Oh, it's a long time.
We'll discuss it, but we'll probably rebuild in the same area. But the question is, what are the rules going to be? I'm assuming that it's going to be that we're going to be much higher when we have to build things.
Chris Axman in Texas, what about Texans? What kind of attitude do you hear with this double blow, this 1-2 punch of Katrina and Rita? It seemed like a kind of trumpet blast, a wake-up that, you know, we could have successive waves here. Who knows? But it's possible. Are Texans changing their attitude about the region they live in, about its viability?
I haven't heard anyone say that they're not interested in remaining in Houston. Houston is fairly far away from the coastline. Folks in Galveston may be reconsidering their options at this point. But the thing is it was just such an emotional issue because of Katrina that people were already so concerned about a major hurricane that they they're just, at this point, sort of still in shock about what is the future.
Do you think that you may have a crying wolf problem next time? Do you hear Texans saying, well, you know, fool me once, et cetera? Are they not going to line up in those millions on those highways on the next warning? Or is the fear of God been planted by what they saw on the Louisiana coast in Katrina?
Well, I talked to a hurricane expert yesterday, and what he told me was that, or a hurricane emergency sort of management expert, and what he told me was that it is really because it was so, the timing was so close, and the severity was so big initially in this one. He said he does not think the next time around, if it's not as severe and not as close to this particular severe hurricane of Katrina, people are going to forget and won't leave in as large in numbers next time.
Forget unless the storms continue to stack up. Chris Axman joining us there in Houston. Thanks very much for being with us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
And Mark Schlefstein, we wish you good luck with your home and with the whole region there. Thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Mark Schlefstein, environment reporter for the Times-Picayune. We're joined now from Florida International University in Miami by Hugh Willoughby. He's a research professor at the International Hurricane Research Center there. Mr. Willoughby, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You can clearly feel the way the country is responding to this, this kind of eye-popping, holy smokes, is this the future? What are we seeing in meteorological terms here in the last month? A one-off or the sign of things to come?
It's probably the sign of things to come, sad to say. On the east coast of the U.S. And the Gulf Coast, we've had a phenomenal run of good luck up until the last couple of years. There've really only been, well, depending on how you count, three or four catastrophic landfalls since 1970. Mm. And so the end of good luck looks like bad luck. It's, as I say, been partly chance, but there are also these 30-year cycles that everybody's talking about, which appear to be real.
And in your community, how much is given to the natural cycle and what margin, if any, to global warming?
I think right now we're having a paradigm shift that there have been a couple of papers published this summer that make a pretty compelling case that there is a global warming effect. My own view is that that isn't the main story, but and I'm hoping that's right. But it's primarily these natural changes made worse by global warming.
You're close to the weather here, close to nature. Do you think that American society, the U.S. economy, is going to have to make some fundamental changes to deal with this ongoing threat you're describing, this greater threat?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to change the way we do some things. One sort of obvious thing that we're going to have to do is think carefully about how we respond to landfalling tropical cyclones. The history of the last 30 years shows that most people that die in hurricanes drown, either in fresh water or salt water. Mm. And the wind only accounts for about one death in five.
So keep that life preserver handy and watch out for the impact on the rest of the economy. Hugh Willoughby at Florida International University in Miami, thank you very much for being with us. We're talking about, well, after Katrina and Rita, a possible new era of super powerful storms and how to deal with it. Can we keep this up? Running, flooding, obsessing over storms. 1-800-423-8255 is the number. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking this hour after Katrina and after Rita at a possible new era of super powerful storms and how to deal with it. You can join the conversation. Can we keep this up? Running, flooding, obsessing over storms. Do we have any option? If this is a 20-year cycle or more, can we afford to keep rebuilding? Have you changed your retirement plans in the last month? Are you looking further north? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined right now from Lafayette, Louisiana, by Shirley Laska. She is professor of environmental sociology at the University of New Orleans, director of the Center for Hazard Assessment and Technology. She evacuated from New Orleans and was in Louisiana as Rita hit. She talked with us in the aftermath of Katrina. It's good to have you back, Shirley Laska. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from College Station, Texas, is Stephen Broners, professor of economics at the University of Texas in Austin. Stephen Broners, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Shirley, first to you. We spoke after Katrina. Now you've got Rita right behind. Across the country, people looking on in kind of amazement and thinking to themselves, as you all must be in the region, how on earth are we going to deal with this if this is a heightened era of storm surges, as we just heard from Hugh Willoughby? Is that how you're looking at it? And can the society, the economy around you there, manage this as it's operated up to now?
I don't think that it can, and I think, just as Mark Schlefstein pointed out, the recovery process is going to be an absolutely incredible challenge. What we learn from this will give us lessons for, perhaps you might call it a wake-up call for rethinking our coastal communities. And in addition, with the climate change anticipated to also impact the coastal areas in ways that with regard to sea level rise and also temperature changes and fluctuations in precipitation, we simply have to come to grips with this as a reality and address these issues. We cannot, as a society, afford to have this kind of loss, and we cannot, as a region, afford to both fiscally but also emotionally and socially deal with this over and over again.
But if you have development on the Gulf Coast, like we've had for decades now, and the nation's energy infrastructure so heavily centered there, and an era of stronger storms coming at us, how do you avoid this kind of clash, this kind of cost?
Well, you restore the natural environment of the coast of Louisiana, which protects many of the pipelines that you're referring to, mm-hmm. and also the facilities that support the offshore oil production process. Secondly, the difference, I believe, that you recognize is that now these storms have hit two big cities, fortunately with Houston only a glancing blow, mm-hmm. but recovery of cities is a different process than recovery of vacation homes along the panhandle and along the coast. And I think this is the shock that we are very appropriately having to deal with. And having the two storms, I believe, was very important because we couldn't go back to thinking that this was just a roulette game and we had just had one bad hand or one bad throw of the dice.
Mm, a kind of giant exclamation mark there, two exclamation marks.
That is correct, yes.
Stephen Broners, as an economist, how are you looking at this? We know that the classic economist response is that the rebuilding is an economic boost in itself and things tend to even out. On the other hand, if we've changed the underlying meteorological formula, if we're going to have stronger hurricanes repeated over an extended period, does that formula still work? Do you still see economic viability here?
Well, I think as in any shock to the economy, there are going to be people who are going to benefit even from such a tragedy like we had with Katrina in terms of the construction industry in the area and the rebuilding. And in terms of the macro economy in the U.S., even though these losses are quite large at a local level, we have a large, very strong economy, and so we have the financial resources to rebuild. That's not really going to be a problem. As a fraction of our total assets, as a fraction of our mm-hmm. GDP, the mm-hmm. losses are not that large, and this is why I think we have a federal government, and this is why the federal government should be allowed to run deficits, because the benefits of rebuilding are going to be for generations to come. So we shouldn't feel that this has to come out of the government's checking account.
But we do see those deficits and what's going on there. Just in storm terms, I wonder if you've ever seen anything like this yourself, Stephen Broners, in terms of how close back-to-back these storms were, an evacuation of this scale. In your experience, is there precedent?
No, I've never seen anything like this. I was here in Texas 22 years ago when Alicia hit, and there's just a big difference in the response. I think the images of Katrina, of the people in New Orleans stranded underwater, had such a big impact. I was in Austin. I was in College Station over the past few days, 150, 200 miles from the coast, and people were buying up. You couldn't buy gasoline anymore. You couldn't buy bottled water. And I think there was a lot of panic in addition to rational concern to get out of the way of a big storm like we had with Rita. But I think that the fact that these two hurricanes happened so close together psychologically really had a big impact here on the people in Houston and even areas pretty far from the coast. So I think that we learned a lot from these experiences, but I think if another hurricane doesn't hit for a while, the panic, I think, will go away, which would be a good thing.
Shirley Laska, how about it? Stephen Broners looks on as an economist. He pulls out the classic macroeconomic analysis here and says what seems at one level to be obvious. We've got a huge economy. We can straddle this kind of disaster. We can put the resources in there to rebuild. This is a formula that works, as painful as it may be. On the other hand, we're hearing that the weather surround here may be fundamentally changing in some degree. So does the classic analysis still work? Does it still stand in your view, Shirley?
Well, I think you have to ask yourself, what is the difference between the potential and the actual outcome? We are in this situation in New Orleans for two reasons that became very clear. One of them was that the physical structures that were designed to protect us did not do so, even though the actual nature of the storm was within the range that they were supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you had an emergency response that we can't even talk about without feeling our stomachs tighten up. And this was also supposedly designed to be appropriate, and it just totally, totally failed the people of New Orleans. So my challenge to an economist would be, yes, there may be the potential economic resources to do so, but how that recovery and how that rebuilding takes place doesn't only have exclamation points, it has great big question marks with regard to whether it's going to take place in a productive way.
Stephen Brunners, how about it? Theory and reality. Do you see a potential conflict, a shortfall there?
Well, I think that if we're going to use taxpayer dollars to rebuild the community, we would like to make sure that the infrastructure is there. You can't prevent a hurricane from hitting, but to kind of withstand a Category 3 storm without having the massive flooding and the breaches in the levee system, I mean, that was just appalling. And I think that if we're going to be spending billions and billions of dollars on that infrastructure, we want to make sure that it's spent wisely and efficiently, and that the system works. I think there are certain aspects of the region, the fact that New Orleans is a big port, the oil industry down there, that's not going to move, and so we need to rebuild in that area. I mean, there are other people who live down there where they may relocate. It's not essential for people to live in areas that are flood prone, but we need to rebuild the area because of the economic benefits from the port and the oil industry down there.
But it could be a very different face on the other side of that rebuilding. And, of course, in principle, everyone was committed to, in principle, in levees and protection, infrastructure protection, before these storms. Stephen Brunners, Shirley Laska, I want to begin to bring our callers in. Marion's calling from Geneva, Alabama. Hi, Marion, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What do you see?
Well, during both hurricanes, Katrina and Rita, one thing that caught my attention I live directly due north, about 80 miles due north of Panama City.
Okay.
And so we've been a part of Floridians evacuating out of Florida.
You're no stranger to that.
No. And we were also, about 9 years ago, Opal came through, and it was a Category 4, I think, before it hit land. And when it hit land, it was a Category 3.
So what does that leave you thinking or wondering after these?
Well, I was curious it seemed like there was a lack of a plan of action, you know, beforehand. I mean, it's not like we don't know they're coming. So I noticed that when Florida was evacuating, and last year was a good example of their plan of action and getting people out of Florida,
yep,
wherever that hurricane was going to hit. And I did not see the, I guess, the disorderliness, the problems that we've had in New Orleans and Texas that, you know, where they were running out of gas, getting stuck on the highway.
Right, 100-mile traffic jams, people spending 2 days.
Yeah.
So why is it different this time, I guess, is the question.
Well, you know, that's what I'm wondering. And it seems that, you know, Florida seems to have a good plan of action to get the people out of the areas that are going to be affected.
At least you hope they continue to have that, and you've seen it in the past. Marion, thanks for that. Let me put it to you, Shirley Laska. I mean, you raised your eyebrows as high as they could go earlier, saying, oh, my gosh, this was a catastrophic response, but what about it? Marion says she's seen it work in the past. Why not in this case more smoothly, in these cases?
Well, with regard to New Orleans, the contraflow plan that was instituted and drilled and mapped did work for people who had automobiles. What was not provided for was a means of evacuation for people who did not. And the city has about 125,000 people who without transportation, 57,000 households, according to the census. And this is where the process fell woefully short on all the government levels in order to address that.
Well, let me ask you then, if we're looking at another 20 years of this, if we're headed into that kind of cycle, and if it's global warming that could be extended, do you think that the country, the culture, has the kind of the right, you know, cut of the jib to do this repeatedly over time? Are we cut out for this kind of evacuation and preventative thinking, or is it somehow just beyond us?
Well, we do. There is such a thing as evacuation and disaster fatigue, and that can happen in two outcomes. One is that people just simply will not move when told to do so because they can't just keep on picking up. And the other one will be that people will leave the area. You will see a portion of the residents of New Orleans not return, and their reasons will be that they simply cannot continue to go through what they've gone through in the past.
Let's get a call from Jack in Annapolis, Maryland. Hi, Jack. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. What do you think?
I've been looking at the pictures of the waterways around New Orleans. Look, if you want to live below sea level, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But you got to build better dikes, and let's start with not calling them levees and working. That's an elegant French name, but you have to have real dikes. And by the way, dikes do leak by definition, and dikes do overflow. And that is not necessarily a problem. But when I look at the pictures that were of the waterways around New Orleans, we all have to shake our head and say, that's not the way it is.
Jack, if I may, I hear a little Dutch in your voice.
Yes, that is.
Am I right?
Yes.
So could it be done right at a reasonable cost? The Dutch do it, but that's a much smaller country than the Gulf Coast of the United States.
Well, that's true, but I'm looking at New Orleans with a lot of people living below sea level. Don't forget, even in the Netherlands, things go wrong. 10 million people will have wet feet, not just 300,000.
Yeah.
It's an enormous difference. And I think that you may want to keep saying we're the biggest, the best, and the greatest. Why not just be a little bit more modest and say, the Dutch have a lot of experience with it. Let's bring them in. After all, we did the same thing in Eastern England.
Yeah.
We made that dry in history.
Trust us, we're paying attention right now, and I don't think anybody's feeling too immodest at the moment when we've seen what's happened. Jack, thanks for your perspective. Stephen Broners, how about it on the infrastructure side? First, dikes, and which Jack prefers to levees, but they were supposed to be maintained before. It turns out they weren't. Is it economically justifiable? Is there any reason we can't build adequate protection, or is it adequate protection for a reduced population that you're describing here?
Well, I think that is really one of the fundamental responsibilities, duties of the government, is to maintain this infrastructure, especially where it relates to public safety. So, I was appalled by what I saw and the lack of investment in it. We spend plenty of money at the state, local, federal level on all sorts of goodies, and it just appalls me that when they pass transportation bills and energy bills, there's so much pork, and when we have crumbling infrastructure. So I think that there's no question that it could be done. I'm not sure I trust the politicians to actually come through based on the past record, but I think there's no question that that's what we need to do if we're going to have cities located in areas where hurricanes are likely to hit.
And let me ask you about the energy infrastructure. It's so massive down there, both in the Gulf, offshore rigs, and on the shore with refineries and the pipelines coming in. We've seen so much of that simply closed down over this last weekend, and a lot of it blown out earlier by Katrina. Can that be hardened to a degree? Maybe we don't have any choice. That's where the oil is. That's where it's going to come ashore. But can it be hardened to a degree, strengthened, fortified to a degree, that the national economy is not constantly vulnerable to these storms rolling ashore, if there are going to be more bigger ones in the decades ahead?
Well, I'm not sure if that's more of an engineering question. I would imagine that the big oil companies operating down there have spent the resources to maintain their infrastructure as best they can. But it is quite shocking to see how vulnerable we are to these temporary shocks in the system, and how the gasoline prices have moved around so much over the last month or two. It really should be a wake-up call that we are really quite susceptible to these kind of supply interruptions.
Shirley Laska, it's quite an amazing picture. People working like crazy to keep the oil flowing so we can burn more of it, which may be fueling global warming, which may be stirring up stronger storms. It doesn't look like an ideal formula.
No, it does not. And the challenges that we face here, we've been working on a project for EPA looking at the Gulf Coast stakeholders' response to climate change. And most stakeholders, most public officials, most people working with organizations don't see it on their radar as a significant issue, because, of course, the coastal land loss and subsidence here is such a large issue. But the problem that we face is that if we adjust and focus our attention on adjusting to climate change, then we will not address the point that you just made, and that is the cause of it, because the argument will be made, well, let's not worry about climate change because we can adjust.
And the cost of that adjustment, if these storms should keep coming, we can see will clearly be enormous. Shirley Laska, Stephen Broners, please stand by. We're talking about, well, the big view after Katrina and Rita, a possible new era of super powerful storms, how to deal with it. You can join us. What have you seen in the mayhem of the Gulf Coast in the last month? What's going on? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking this hour, after Katrina and Rita, at a possible new era of super powerful storms and how to deal with it. You can join us. Can we keep this up? The running, flooding, obsessing over storms. Do we have any option? And what's going to shape the plan, the future reality here? Government, the markets, Mother Nature? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been joined in this hour from College Station, Texas, by Stephen Broners, professor of economics at the University of Texas in Austin. From Lafayette, Louisiana, by Shirley Laska, professor of environmental sociology at the University of New Orleans. And right now, from Washington, by Keith Robertory, national preparedness expert for the American Red Cross. Keith Robertory, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Hello, Tom.
Good to have you. We're told, and again just in this hour, by Hugh Willoughby at the Hurricane Research Center in Florida, that yes, indeed, we're in a cycle here where storms are more likely to be more intense, and we may have years of this to come. You're there at the Red Cross looking at preparation. What? How does it change your calculus that this is going to be a repeated phenomenon?
Well, you know, one of the things that we try to do is we try to get individuals to prepare for it. Every disaster is an intensely personal experience, whether it be a massive hurricane bearing down on them or their house burning down. You know, total destruction is total destruction. So what we try to do is focus at individuals and having individuals take those preparedness actions that they need so they're ready and prepared.
But if the ocean's coming through the levee, how much good is my backpack full of, meals ready to eat going to do me?
Well, you could ask that question to a lot of people who were standing on the bridge or in other various areas that didn't have any food.
Now, I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious, but I guess the question is, if this is going to be a repeated thing, if we're going to see this with greater frequency and intensity in the years ahead, can it really be, it will be for individuals in the moment addressed by that backpack and plans, but can the big national issue be addressed by that, Keith?
I think it can, because there's a lot of issues that will build from that. As people work towards their individual preparedness, they're going to also take mitigation activities, which are going to prepare them. And this could be doing things like preparing your home so that way if it gets flooded, you have your hot water heater raised and so on. But this awareness that it creates in the community, these people will start asking their local, their state, and their federal lawmakers and saying, okay, I'm prepared. What are you going to do now? Mm. And that way it drives from the grassroots up.
Shirley Laska, this gets into your sociology expertise. Do you see the millions of individual voices of Gulf Coast residents, both in their actions and in their demands, changing the face of the economy, the society there, so that it's better prepared for this? Or do you see people just clearing out?
Well, I completely agree with Keith. The mitigation ideas, one could consider them when one has levees as what you might consider redundancy, meaning that you have the levees, but you anticipate that any accident could breach a levee, even with the technology that the Dutch have developed. And so you develop a community conversation about how to be safe. And you do so by focusing people on their individual safety, but then that conversation expands out to, well, you know, what do we need to do as a community?
And do you see that beginning to happen? Do you expect, I mean, we've heard about the kind of political problems in New Orleans, certainly, and maybe more broadly, the ineffectual political conversation there in recent years. Do you think that will be tied up, woven in a different way now, Shirley?
Absolutely, and you have an example from this program because Mark Schlestein said to you that he is going to now be thinking about elevating his home.
Yeah.
No one in the city elevates their homes.
And he never had a foot and a half of water in his second floor before.
Second floor, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Elise is calling from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Elise, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone. How are you?
Very well. What do you see, Elise?
Well, I don't want to be cynical, but if I could just address a comment made a little bit earlier that, you know, the Florida evacuation went well and all this other nonsense. It was done in a political year. The governor is the brother of the president. That's why you saw the president handing out water. And that's why FEMA overpaid that state by $31 million.
So which storm and which year are you referring to, Elise?
Last year in 2004, prior to the election.
Right, right.
And I really don't think it's appropriate to reference that particular incident because, again, it was a state that needed to be won. The government would do anything to make Florida look good. Hence the president being there, handing out water personally. Hence FEMA overpaying by $31 million the residents of Florida who weren't even affected by it. So you really can't count that, and I'm surprised it was even brought up in the context of this conversation.
But don't you think with the whack Washington and the Bush administration have taken in the just rage of criticism over Katrina that they'll be incented to be much more attentive now, any government?
Let me put it to you this way. I'm not holding out much hope for any competence from this administration in any area of governance, particularly hurricane preparation, sorry.
We see it. No vote of confidence there. Elise, thanks for calling. Stephen Broners, in economic terms, what about it? Is it possible that we press the boundaries of our will and competence with an era of stronger storms that just tips away from getting it done? Or is it, or I don't know, do markets and economic dynamics, even working through the government, do you suggest that we will rise to it and do it? Or do we just kind of naturally veer away and take a different path?
Well, I think that there are some things that I've observed, which says that our system is very good in terms of some of the ways of dealing with this. But there's this coordination problem. I just look at the traffic problems that we had here in Texas.
Yeah.
And individuals can take their own actions to protect and insure against the loss being as severe as it otherwise might have been. But even with the government trying to tell people, let's stagger the return to Houston. Let's not open the schools yet.
Right.
People are going to do what they want to do, and whether it's staying behind when it's unwise to do so and then causing us to spend a lot more resources to rescue them when it's a lot more difficult to do so, or when it's everyone leaving Houston, not everyone, but 2 million people leaving the area,
yeah,
when you know, only maybe 500,000 people were in zones where they were really required to do so. It is hard in a free society to organize that kind of a problem. And we can practice it with the government officials going through drills, but until you actually see what happens, I don't know how you can anticipate what's going to happen in some of these circumstances.
Well,
that's not to say that there weren't huge mistakes and incompetencies at every level of government in the Katrina response.
But this gets back to what Shirley Lasko was saying earlier, that in theory, all of this can be done. As you say, it's a rich country, and we know what the risks are, but there's reality, which as an economist you know, people behave the way they behave. And it just leaves me wondering if, with all the interest at stake here, you see the country rising to this or veering away in a kind of a market response. Maybe there'll be less development on the coast in the decades ahead. Maybe there'll be less of a population drift and boom there.
Yeah, I don't think that would necessarily be a bad thing. I think we have to think about rebuilding areas that we know are going to be putting more people at risk in the future. If we can make it safe, if we can provide the infrastructure to make those areas safe and livable, that's one thing. But I think we really need to take a step back and take a look at this, because I was just appalled, like I said, by what I saw with Katrina, but I was also troubled by, it doesn't matter if it's a hurricane, whatever kind of disaster, it was like a bad science fiction disaster movie to see what was going on the highways in Houston when people just were panicking and leaving the city. And I don't know how we can coordinate people's behavior in a way when they're acting out of fear and panic and concern, and everyone decides to do the same thing at the same time.
Shirley Laska, this gets right into your wheelhouse. What should we think? It was much more effective ultimately than the New Orleans evacuation, and yet we saw a kind of chaos on the highways, those long lines and people running out of gas. Was this a fairly good evacuation? Could we expect better? Is it reasonable to expect gasoline for every car that's expected to drive out of the city? How would you assess it?
Well, I'd like to say just one quick thing about it and turn to answering a question that you asked more broadly. I mean, my answer would be that this is the first time that Houston has had a 5 million population has had this
yeah.
kind of response, and so it simply can't go well. And secondly, it can't go well the first time, and I mean in terms of the magnitude. So
mm-hmm.
there will be a lot of planning and a lot of response that will make it be better the next time.
That's good.
But I'd like to turn to your question about, you know, what can the society, how it will it respond to these coastal issues? And there's one aspect of this that we forget very quickly because there is not a visual to it.
Hmm.
Remember that the entire city is someplace else.
Scattered over the country.
A certain portion of those people will come back, or will come back soon, and that their plight is incredible. There are people, the norm is 10 people in a house, wonderful families, extended family members, without jobs, without prospect of employment, who will have to be finding means to survive. And if I could be, how can I say, prescient, I would just like to pinpoint all the places in this country that the New Orleanians have gone to and the challenges that they are experiencing in those locations.
It kind of the seeds of this disaster floating all over the country, you're saying, with what kind of consequences?
Well, that's the point, that when you ask about whether a place can be rebuilt, think of that only as one element of what happens when you have this dispersal of people from an event like this. We have to, as a society, learn how to address that dispersal, especially if as Professor Byrne is saying, you know, many of them will not be coming back, and we haven't even started to scrape the surface of that challenge.
I mean, speaking of scraping the surface, do you think we're really alert to the challenge that's standing in front of us? If we have a repeated sort of drumbeat of storms like this, no one's saying it's going to be hurricanes Katrina and Rita back-to-back all the time, but almost all the meteorologists are saying we're in a tougher cycle here. Are we really taking on board what that means, even with the blow of Katrina, Shirley Laska?
No, I don't think. The culture has a very difficult time. There's been recent work on a book entitled Collapse, and I'm sorry, I'm just drawing a blank on the author's name, name at this point, and in asking when societies do collapse, what does, what are the causes of it?
Oh, that's Jared Diamond's
book. That's right, Jared's mm-hmm. Book. And the first answer he gives is that the society simply doesn't recognize that this collapse or this incredible challenge is happening. And then second, when it gets on the radar, it's a puzzlement period of not really knowing what to do. And then third, when it decides to do, then there's, as Professor Brun has mentioned, there's a whole organizational issue. And there's also the political will and who benefits from doing something and who doesn't benefit.
We're trying to put our antenna way up and put it all on the radar right now. Juanita's calling from Panama City, Florida. Hi, Juanita. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I think society or our country needs to step back and use a little common sense. Down here in Panama City Beach, they spend $500,000 a year to pile sand back up on the beach, and it washes away every time a hurricane comes. Luckily, this time it washed back up by itself, but some of it did anyway. But I just think that common sense tells you that once you are flooded out several times, you don't need to be rebuilding again in that area.
So what does that say to you personally, Juanita? You're living there in Panama City. Are you making your long-term plans there or something else?
Well, I've lived here 27 years, and this year is the first time I ever looked up about my sea level and the possibility of flooding. And I And I'm ashamed of that, too. I have been one to sit out all the hurricanes since we've been here.
But, you know, that region is really built on go-go growth, you know, build and develop, and is fueled in an enormous economic boom in much of the southern region. Do you see that changing, Juanita?
Absolutely not, because they have, like, 8 more condominiums going up on Panama City Beach. I mean, the St. Joe Company is just pulling people in here. And the hurricane is coming, and it's going to wipe it out, and they're going to rebuild it again. So how much tax dollars are we supposed to put in a useless enterprise of rebuilding and rebuilding and rebuilding? I understand people's lives have been shattered, but, you know, nature tells us, and our common sense tells us, and science is trying to tell us, that we do not need to be doing this.
All talking to us right now, and yet those are homes to a lot of people. Those are arenas for economic growth, or have been seen that way. Keith Robertory at the Red Cross, is there a point at which the Red Cross itself looks at policy issues, says, we're afraid we may have too many millions of people too frequently on the roads, on the run, and there's a policy side to this that needs to be addressed, or are you always in the response mode?
Well, the American Red Cross does advocate for things that are going to make people safer, and this could be building codes, this could be all sorts of different things going on. Like, we were advocating for the stronger building codes that have been enacted in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
We do want people to do those things, to do the mitigation actions, to follow the stronger building codes, to take those steps to prevent this. We do go in, and we will help people no matter what their situation is. No matter how many times they've rebuilt, it's really up to the federal government to say, well, that's in a floodplain. You can no longer rebuild there.
And Stephen Broner's in Austin or College Station, if the fundamentals are changing, if the weather is fundamentally changing, does that send economists back to the drawing board? Do you go back and reconsider some of your formulas and expectations?
Well, I think that only in a minor way. I think we don't want to say, because we had a couple of very serious storms that happened to hit either right at or very close to big population areas, that we want to extrapolate a trend.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it just gives us a good chance to take a look at this tough policy question, which is, you know, we want to help people in times of need, but we don't want to keep rebuilding in areas where we know whether it's with the same frequency as a past or maybe even a higher frequency, there's a likelihood of more destruction in the future. That doesn't seem to me to be something that would make a lot of sense as a way to use taxpayer dollars.
But going to be a huge questions on just that front, standing right in front of us as the whole country looks at the meeting of weather and reality there. Stephen Broner's at the University of Texas in Austin, it's been great having you. Thanks a lot for joining us this
hour.
Thank you. Shirley Laska, always good to talk to you. We wish you well there, getting back to your home. Thanks for joining us from Lafayette.
Thank you.
Shirley Laska at the University of New Orleans, and Keith Robertory at the American Red Cross, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jupp, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, Mary Moore, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Matt Odette and Angel Cozzelli. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.